This week, we struggle to get to grips with Alicent's character. We discuss how one utterance of a word Dracarys could have saved the realm from certain doom, and we ask ourselves, does Bigfoot have a foot fetish? Welcome to Bastards and Broken Things. Hello, lovely lords and ladies. I am your host, Sir Len, and I have gathered the small council to discuss the events of episode 9 of House of the Dragon. Those doors stay shut until our business is finished. On our council, we have Lady Emma Arryn.
Nice to see you all. Very excited to be back.
And of course, we have Bronze John.
You all right, mate?
Yeah, all right. Just chugging along on that.
Just doing these, isn't it?
Doing more of these. Yep. And of course, we have Lady Baron.
Greetings.
Boo.
Once again, greetings, Earthlings. How are you today? The good news is the council sound enthused. So that's
Viserys
really good.
Has just died. That's a really good start. Have a bit of couth, okay? Mm. We're grieving.
There is no time for mourning, okay? Because we've got to get our shit sorted out right here.
Yes. Yeah?
And install some wanker on the throne.
Hmm.
Hmm. So you all right? Yeah, you're just happy.
Good, mate.
Happy, just
good.
Yeah,
you know, you're in Australia, so you're missing out on all the chaos of the leadership of our country.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've heard it's gone to shit since I left. To be honest,
yeah,
the UK
it is worse than in Westeros in House of
Definitely.
Dragon.
It fucking is, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah, I'd take the small council over the fucking atrociousness that is our government.
I'd take Otto Hightower pulling the strings and having some idea of what he wants to achieve over whatever it is that we're enduring.
Definitely, he'd be good.
He would. I'd vote for him.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that my beloved homeland is falling to pieces. I feel a bit like Daenerys. You know, I've been shipped across to another continent. And I need to come back there to
Sold to a Dothrak.
Sorry?
Yeah.
Didn't work out too well for
getting,
her, though,
what,
it?
Every night? Nah, no. All right, well, as is tradition here, we start by giving the episode a blueberry rating. Of course, we had a hot take earlier in the week with myself and Sir Gareth, the little squire who has possibly been knighted, but we're not quite sure.
Definitely
because
not.
Of a technicality. Bronze John says definitely not.
Well, he's turned up to like two of these pods. Like, I mean, you can't get
shambles.
Knighted. Fucking hell.
We should get shambles.
If he turns up to the finale, he can get knighted. That's the incentive for him. That's the carrot.
That's a big if.
I think he gets executed in the finale, to be honest.
Yeah.
Could do.
Episode 1, season 2.
End on a high.
Could do. Yeah. Just watched Baylor, actually, last night, season 1, episode 9.
Why?
Sad times. Because my partner, who has never seen Game of Thrones, started watching House of the Dragon. Because she never liked Game of Thrones. And she watched House of the Dragon, and she's really into it. So then we started Game of Thrones, and I'm like, excellent, this is great. Mm. I get to watch all of it again.
Yep.
So I'm really excited. And we just watched Baylor last night, and she was like, what the fuck?
Mm.
So, you know. It's really fun reliving those moments. Anyway, I digress. Let's get back to this.
More of that.
We're going to give this
episode.
Let's talk
about Game of Thrones. Please.
We're going to give this episode a blueberry score. And we've pretty much got the whole gang together, of course, without Gareth. But what did we make of this episode, team? Episode 9, titled The Green Council. I'm going to go to Emma first.
Oh,
hello, Emma.
Oh, okay. You're hoping for a bit of positivity from me, are you, before we get into the rest of it?
No, never. Never.
Well, I actually, yesterday, I watched both episode 8 and episode 9 in quick succession, which was interesting.
Yeah, watch that as well.
Yeah, we're covering that next, are we? Okay, got on it. And in between that, listen to the podcast. Well done for last week, Lucy and Len. Very good two-man show. Almost as good as the Emma and John show, but
definitely better than that.
And then this morning I listened to the hot take. I am very torn. I'm flip-flopping with episode 9 because there are parts of this episode that had very redeeming qualities. There was some good acting. There were some interesting parts of the storyline. And interestingly, I've just put the book Fire and Blood down at the moment that King Viserys died, because I thought, actually, I don't want to ruin the last two episodes for myself, last episode now. So I've left it because I feel like at this point, I can wait to find out what happens in the book and see it live on the screen, seeing as I've gone this far through the season. So there are a lot of confused faces. So either I'm waffling or I'm quiet, one or the other.
No.
Just listening. Just listening.
Just listening intently.
Oh, sorry,
had to deliver a training course today and there were similar faces
looking
on
at your feet.
The screen.
No, don't say that.
That in itself lost this episode of Blueberry. Because there's no context to that at all. And actually, I've been mulling this over this evening, thinking about it, and I think that it just wasn't strong enough to warrant it compared to the rest of the season. And I think it's only a 3 Blueberry for me.
Interesting, Emma.
So I've
thank you for those waffles. You know,
wandered through the scores in the last 3 episodes.
We're going to throw it to Lady Baron next. Lady Baron.
Yes, thought this was quite a meh episode, actually. Not saying that because it's episode 9, it had to be a blockbuster. Didn't really.
As is tradition.
Bust some blocks right at the end.
Ooh.
But, like, literally, like the building blocks of the sept.
Yes, we've read between the lines.
Yeah, just for those at home that didn't get the context there. it's just. I have to say, I don't know if this has been covered yet, because I was thinking, why am I not really connecting with this show? Like, what is it about it? I think it's probably one of the most drab and dull shows to look at. I think it's just the palette that they use, it's just 50 Shades of Grey. And even when they go outside, I'm like, where is the natural light? Like, if you think about Game of Thrones, I know obviously they had use of different locations. I thought King's Landing had like a Mediterranean climate. Why is it always so fucking dark and just dreary? And as much as I might enjoy certain scenes and performances, watching it is not enjoyable because looking at it is just not, I just don't feel like I get anything out of it. Like visually, I really don't like the way it's shot. I have to say, I don't like the scenery. It seems like because they don't have to move around, they're like, let's just do it all in Northern Ireland. And it's like, right, well, I thought King's Landing was meant to be warm. Am I wrong? I mean, is this like
no.
Game of Thrones was obviously like in the quote unquote summer, you know, the long summer or whatever. Is it different because of that? But it just looks so dull to me. It's such like the colouring is just so boring and one dimensional. But anyway, yeah, I didn't think it was a great episode. I thought there were some good moments, but there's also stuff that was a bit baffling. I thought certain characters that had potential kind of undercut by, once you actually hear them speak and have dialogue, like Aemond, I was like, oh, I thought he was quite cool last week. And now he's speaking. I'm like, yeah, the mystique's gone. It's a shame because I actually thought last week was strong and the week before. I would give this a 3. I thought it was quite, eh.
The ladies are aligned.
We have. An alliance has formed.
The council speaketh. They have rolled their little balls on the table, put them in the little holes, and
just murdered someone.
Watch out for those balls.
Who are they going to murder?
Finally.
All right, I'll go next because we'll end with a blockbuster. Because as is in my notes, definitely put John last because it's just I just know the way his little brain works.
Yeah,
I make all these nice plans. And I know what he's going to say. Anyway. I'm very conflicted. I'm conflicted with this episode because I think there are some parts that are well constructed. I really like the eerie opening, with the empty throne room and the sort of piano motif and the servant finding Viserys. I think that's all very good and plays into a lot of the things that I imagined when I read the book. I really like the Green Council scene. There's something in it that I'm not too fond of, which I'll get onto. And I think the work of the actress playing Princess Rhaenys is fantastic. I think she's been brilliant this season. She's a powerhouse, you know, and I think someone I am, actually connected to as a character. And I think that's important that we have some of these emotional connections when this war is about to kick off. But I think because I'm someone who sort of knows the source material, I just think this episode could have been so much better. And that's obviously, I'm not going to say that's the show's fault. I mean, for anyone who's read the book, I think there's just so much more in here, like in the source material, that if it was translated to the screen, I think just would have made the whole situation a lot more fucking disgusting, what the Greens are doing. And it didn't come across like, you know, it's the maddest thing in the world what they're doing. It sort of just, it lost so much tension because they kept this escapade to find Aegon going on, which was just such false jeopardy. Because I've written in my notes here, like, if Aegon died, who gives a fuck if Aegon died? Aemond's king, that's better for everyone, right? So there's no jeopardy, in my opinion. Whether Aegon went to Essos, whether someone slit his throat in Fleabottom, or, you know, whatever, there's other kings they could install, ones who are better suited to the role anyway. You know what I mean? So for me, there's zero jeopardy finding Aegon in Fleabottom. And I've always thought, even when I read the source material, I was like, it's probably better if this kid just dies. Genuinely.
Do you think that they did that to try and give him a bit of background, considering they haven't bothered with any of that, really?
Well, of course. Of course. And it's completely correct background, because this is exactly what happens in the books. He is found in a fighting pit in fucking, you know, Fleabottom, and there is this, these children fights going on, and there's his bastards down there, and there's all this shit going on. But I've always thought, like, he is a character who obviously might have time to grow and change or whatever, but at this point it's not a disaster if he dies, in my opinion. You know what I mean? It's actually more of a hindrance to have him alive. So zero jeopardy finding him, zero, in my opinion. And it took away from the tension in the Red Keep, which is really interesting. You've got, you know, all these lords and ladies being purged and hanged, and the servants being imprisoned, and it's essentially like in lockdown, you know. And
every I'm time sorry, they what happened out in into... lockdown in Australia, Len?
Yeah, exactly right. The kangaroos imprisoned us, and the koalas beat us at night. That's what happened. Yeah, but I just felt like that was a weird decision. So I have to give this episode a 3 blueberry. I think there are a couple of things in here where they wrote themselves into a corner, like, and they didn't need to, especially the ending. I think there's a lot of questions going to be raised about that end scene. Yes, it was kind of cool, but thematically, it didn't need to exist.
I think it was cool. Like, it was cool for about 3 seconds, and then reality hit, and you're like, but why?
I mean, you just look at the memes online. It's like, why didn't she just burn them all alive?
Burn them all.
There's no reason not to. Like, genuinely, like, she's smart. She knows they're about to go to war. She knows she's going to be fighting these guys on Dragonback next episode.
Well, that's it.
So,
yeah.
it's like, why wouldn't she just fucking do it? And they made it up. You know, it's not in the book. They made up this fictional scene.
Oh, is it not? I obviously didn't know that.
Oh, so maybe it's absolutely
crazy. So the only reason I give it 3 is because I think they wrote themselves into a corner and they took away from the Red Keep stuff. And the Red Keep stuff is good. It's good. It's just annoying that it wasn't more of the episode. So I'm giving it a 3. And like I said in the hot take, I have very high hopes for next episode, knowing, seeing the trailer, what a few moments that are coming up. And I think episode 10 might be their big episode this season, not episode 9. Over to Bronze John.
Yeah. it's a terrible episode, isn't it? It's it's really bad. It's really bad. And that we were talking about this last night offline. That end part, that spectacle, there will be the vast majority of viewers will love that.
That's right.
Because it just looks amazing, right? And Lucy just said, "Oh, it's not in the book," and that is my biggest problem with it. Because motivational wise, it makes zero sense. I think in the next episode you'll have Rhaenys who will be like, "Yeah, let's go on the attack," and it'll be like, "What do you mean? Like, you literally could have killed them yesterday. What are you talking about?" Yeah. It's that. So visually, I get it. I know There'd be people that listen to this and they'd be like, what do you mean? It was amazing. It isn't.
Yeah. Yep.
It's lazy. And it's the sort of thing that people do when they're like, oh, this would be quite cool, wouldn't it? Well, no. I mean, like, in terms of the character's motivations, it doesn't make any sense. And it's going to look even worse in, like, so next episode and then a couple episodes down the line with where the story actually goes. Absolutely. She's right to not burn all of them there and then, like, in terms of her character in this show, but it will not make sense in terms of where the story goes. And actually, it kind of, it annoys me a little bit because it's leaning towards that, you know, the blacks are holier than thou and the greens aren't. And it isn't. It really isn't black and white like that. Mm. It really isn't.
No, it isn't.
The Aemon stuff, I actually felt like he was acting a little bit more like within himself. I didn't think it was over the top. I didn't mind him in this episode. Some of the more interesting parts in terms of his relationship with Helena and the small suggestions that maybe they're his kids. You know, like
that's interesting.
I like that. That's just terrible, isn't it? Like, so the, oh my God, this chase for Aegon. Oh my word, Jesus Christ! I've never been more bored ever. I was like, what the fuck? Like the twins in the book, fine. In the show, I don't care. I don't care.
Had any of us noticed them up until this episode? Because I had
me and Len.
Well, last episode.
Yeah, bits and pieces, right? But forget that it's episode 9. If this was episode 7, I'd be like, oh, fuck, what's going on? Where's the pacing gone in this episode? Like, I would almost have been, I'd have been more impressed if the whole episode was just in that room at the beginning. I'd be kind of like, oh, I like the artistic choice here. Give some of those older guys a chance to act because they can.
I was literally thinking off the top of my head, and I don't know how compelling an hour of television it made, but you see Viserys dead and then they go to the room and they're in there for an hour and it's fucking, you know, kicking off and there's stuff going on. That to me would have been a very strong episode, and it creates that sense of fear that I got reading the book, the idea that it was like, fucking hell, this is mental.
Yeah. You know, I was really looking forward to that scene. So the way in which it played out, we've got Barristan the Bold, number 2, for some reason. I mean, I like him. I do like him.
Yep.
But he has no significance in the books. They're obviously going to turn him into Barristan the Bold for Team Black. That's definitely going to happen. and it's just there's too many things going on where I'm just like, fucking hell. And the one thing that really killed it for me, again, episode 9 of a 10 episode season, and I do think that episode 10 will be excellent. I do.
Yeah.
But it's episode 9. You just said you're rewatching season 1 with your missus, and you've just watched episode 9, and I remember how I felt when, you know, spoiler warning, Ned Stark, he dies in episode 9. Now, I reckon there's about 5 or 6 characters that could have died in episode 9 in season 1. You'd be closely devastated as much as you were with Ned. There's not a single character in this show at the moment. If they died in episode 9, I wouldn't be like, oh, fucking hell. No, how have they done that? I'd be like, okay, next. I don't have anyone to root for in this show. I'm just, get on with it. Let's get to the wars. There are set pieces I'm looking forward to, but there's no real character development. The one character that was acting out of his skin, he's gone now. So it's like, well, you talk about there's no stakes with Aegon, and you're right. But I'd apply that to everyone.
I guess it's something they could obviously work on over the coming seasons. I mean, you're right in terms of the impact isn't there for, like, if even if we lost Daemon, which is probably one of my favorite characters, I'd be like,
Yeah, but like, well, I think he's one of your favourite characters because you've read the book. I'm talking about just take the show as isolated. Because look, I'm cheating a little bit. I'm looking forward to episode 10 because as we discussed yesterday, I think there is one, probably two things that are going to happen in episode 10 that I'm more looking forward to seeing people's reactions to because I know it's happening. But I mean, does that make for an amazing series? Definitely not. And this was the culmination of everything that I was worried about. Look, so for me, it's a two.
Ouch.
No one can convince me this isn't the worst episode of the season. No one. And the only people that think that it isn't the worst episode of the season, their reason for it will be, no, but the dragon at the end, and it's like, but that's terrible. You're taking a character that actually you're supposed to now like, because they've clearly made Team Black the best team ever. She's fucking killed like hundreds of bystanders.
That was my
what's going
thinking.
On here?
I mean, there's an interview with her, just to touch on that, Eve Best, the actress, and she says that this scene shows actually that she should have been the true ruler because she showed such mercy to her adversaries. And like, you've killed so many of the common people that were shuttled in there against their will to watch this kind of, and you didn't give a shit because they're below you and it's like fucking class war at this point.
Well, that's it. Like, I don't mind if they've crafted the story to be that, you know what? I mean, we've got two warring families that don't give a shit about anyone. We should despise both of them.
That would be quite
good. I wouldn't necessarily mind that.
It was definitely meant to be a Daenerys sort of bad bitch moment, and it like was for a second, and then you think how many people are dead now because of this.
Yeah.
You know, you can't deny that Eve Best's performance was standout in this episode.
Yeah, but I've always liked her.
The writing behind it was appalling.
Yeah, like when her and Corliss, I think, I can't remember if it was episode 4 or whatever, I was saying that the older actors in this show are good when they're just given time, good dialogue. I really like them. But then they're put in scenarios that not only do they not exist in their book, they have no business existing in this show. If you're supposed to be a viewer that's like, oh, right, okay, well, why has that happened? Like,
All right, well, that's our thoughts on the episode. I think we all agree that it's one of the weakest, if not the weakest episode of the season. Now, listener, I know that sounds like a hard thing to hear, especially if you thought, like John said, the dragon thing was awesome. But we're going to tell you why they made certain mistakes this episode. From our perspective, and we've also said that episode 10 is going to be a banger no matter what, so don't worry, right, just chill out.
Next week,
Zimmer
Blitz all round.
It's important to preface it with, if you watched it and you loved it, hey, fine. You know, good fortune to you. You know, I have no issue with that. I do have a certain issue with people rating this episode higher than, you know, episode 6 of Rings of Power, because that's just getting
that's
review
a hate
bombed
crime.
Because, well, that is a hate crime, and some of it is genuine.
Yeah, it really is.
If you enjoyed it, fair play to you. But I expected much, much more, and what I got was, you know, fucking frozen pizzas, £1 frozen pizza from Tesco or whatever. Awful.
Yeah, Walmart. To you Americans, or Kmart maybe, I don't know.
Yeah. 7-Eleven.
Let's have a quick advert and then we'll jump into the plot. Yes, quick advert here, just to say that we are coming to the end of our run of coverage of House of the Dragon Season 1. But of course we do so much more here at Fan Critical. You can, if you're listening on any of the other channels that isn't Fan Critical, our main channel, please do go across to Fan Critical and subscribe, because we release loads of different content covering loads of different films. We have our own original content, our How the Fuck Have You Not Seen That series, Worst of Netflix, all these things will be around. So when House of the Dragon is finished, and obviously hopefully finished on a triumphant high with episode 10, we implore you to come back and listen to us for other stuff, yeah? and to say, if you do want to give us some precious monies, go to patreon.com/fancritical. Last week, we made an impassioned plea to help little Gareth because he's so small and that. And the money you give gives vital nutrients to little Gareth to help him grow and flourish in what is an ever-changing and scary world for him. Okay, so please do.
He's gonna be very patreon.com upset with that, isn't he?
Again,
/ yeah. Fan Critical, and help our little squire Gareth. Nah, just joking. It helps the podcast, doesn't it? But in a way, it helps Gareth.
Definitely
so,
helps
you know,
him. Yeah.
I mean, all I'm good. Upset by that. Let alone Gareth. Traumatized, if anything.
All right, let's jump into the plot of episode 9, The Green Council.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Okay, so episode 9 is called The Green Council, obviously referring to the new small council. Otto and Alicent have been growing and assembling to purge the kingdom and install Aegon II as king. After King Viserys' death, we see an empty iron throne. In the dead of night, a servant boy has found Viserys dead. He tells the other servants, and then the queen is told that he has passed. I've put here that I really like the way this opens with the piano motif, the sort of empty throne room, gloomy.
Dark.
You know, I really liked it.
You can't see anything.
I like
I think
the darkness
maybe
of this, Lucy, because
someone's
dead.
My TV is probably a bit shit. I mean, some of that has to probably go onto my TV, but it's just like, where are we? Yeah. Where are we? There's no distinguishing features.
You know
no,
where
I
we
don't.
Are. Come on. It's not like we're in fucking Ashai.
Well,
yeah,
we
that's
be
where
a
we are, Lucy. Yeah,
well, obviously. I know. Can't fucking see a thing. But yeah, the piano was good. The music was good.
It was a strong opening, wasn't it? Like, I mean, that whole opening and then with the small council and all that, you know, rushing around in those discussions were good. It was a good opening. It had promise. Like,
I've got a question here.
Promised.
I've got a question here. Alicent, and she's going to be a hot top. We didn't even really get to talk about Alicent even in our fucking overview thoughts, which I think is a bit mad because... I've put here, John, she seemed genuinely upset that Viserys was dead.
Yeah.
I was confused.
I think it's probably more the right now things have to happen rather than...
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's... Yeah. Well, yeah, because it's like, right, well, now it's going to kick off.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think she did have feelings for him, like tender feelings of caring.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got to develop some kind of affection.
I think she cared about
for
him.
Somebody, yeah, that you've been married to for that long as well. Mm. And I think,
know, but fucking hell, he's a zombie, isn't he? Like,
it is funny how they all seemed well, quite surprised zombie. He died. I was like, he's been dead for years.
Have you seen this bloke? Look at him.
Yeah.
I wonder if part of her reaction was also, you know, like I said, fear, but like trepidation of how do we move forward now, and is all of this the right thing to do? What should I be fighting for? I think that's what's going through her head. And I think she's a good actress.
She's very good.
I think Olivia Cooke is doing a very good job. I think they've zigzagged on her character to the point now where I'm a bit like, I don't understand. You're trying to kill Rhaenyra one week and now you're like, oh no, we can't kill Rhaenyra. It's like, sorry? You took a fucking dagger to her throat. Couple years ago, obviously, in show
well, that's
timeline.
It. It's my good friend, the time jump, so just making everything confusing.
Ah, my good friend, the time jump. Hello, time jump. How are you today?
Welcome back.
I've written here that, and this is the thing that I was talking about, that it could have been so much more grotesque and disgusting. This whole, you know, we have to hide that he's dead until we sort shit out situation. They leave him in the room for 7 days rotting. 7 days.
Is it actually 7 days? I mean, that's batshit.
And that is mental to me. Like, it's just kind of like, it goes to show you how, and I know the book version of Alicent doesn't really give a fuck about Viserys. You know what I mean? Mm. She's fully focused on installing Aegon and getting all the ducks in a row instead of caring for her late husband's body. You know, the stench coming out of that room and shit like that they talk about in the books, and it's obviously foul.
It must have stunk in there anyway, to be honest. I mean, he's been rotting for about 10 years.
Jesus, he was already rotting.
I reckon there are people that would have gone in there and like served him breakfast and stuff and like combed his hair and that. But yeah.
Yeah.
He's actually looking quite chipper today. He's not really talking much, but yeah. I think he's going to pull through. He's dead. Yeah. I've
state of him.
Look, I think I'm going to dig a little bit into this episode a little bit. I'll try not
really
to.
I hadn't got that.
No. Well, you know, I'm going to surprise you then.
Just wait.
Why is that boy not running? Why is he so calm?
Because what I've always found about the master, like the wisp, you know, the birdies that give all the whispers and stuff, they are very calm, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're all very well trained.
No, but hurry up.
Like little spies.
Well, if they're the only ones that know, then there's no rush, is there?
They don't want to draw attention to themselves either. Yeah. Why is that lad running? Mm. What's he doing?
There's no one there.
He's just walking along.
No one's going to look at him. Yeah, no. Shit, there's always kids. Someone. That's why they use them. Someone. They're inconspicuous.
Someone's always watching, John.
all right, fair enough. I'll accept Lucy's answer. That seems fairly correct. So this happens literally the night after it's all kicking off in the palace.
Mm-hmm.
They've all the other entourage. They've all gone already, have they?
Well, yeah. I tell you what. I was worried that they were still at the fucking castle because I was sat there going, are you, when they were talking about, and we'll get onto it in a minute, actually, let's move on to it now. We'll talk about this. The small council, or the Green Council, plus Lord Beesbury, convene and discuss what must be done. It is revealed that the Greens have had a plan in place for some time to kill Rhaenyra and Daemon and install Aegon II as king. Alicent is shocked by this.
No.
So,
what?
Let's talk about this now. Rhaenyra and Daemon, like you just alluded to, John, I was worried because it had just been the same night that they had. Obviously, they would surely just stay in the castle and then go back.
Yeah,
like
sleep it off.
She did say immediately after the dinner fiasco of episode 8 that she'd take the children back, but I suppose she had sent them to bed. So maybe they left at dawn or something, you know, to catch the good waves.
Maybe. but yeah, it is a bit misleading.
She said, I'll fly back the next day on Dragonback.
Yeah, she did say that. Yeah.
That didn't happen.
She did say that. So where is she?
Hopefully she doesn't. Well, yeah, true. I wonder how long it takes to sail from King's Landing to Dragonstone. Probably like 4 hours on the ferry?
Question. Because, Len, when you say, and I'm really sorry because I know that I'm going to derail us here. When you say that they've kept his body there for 7 days, are you talking canon book here? Because I did not get that impression in the show. I felt like this all happened in the same day.
No, it does happen.
No, in the show, this is all in one day.
Yeah. Okay, that's fine. So that it's less illogical that Rhaenyra has like disappeared for 7 days when she said she was coming back the next day. Fine. Okay, correct. Makes more sense.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just saying it could have been better. Like, you know, if this whole Red Keep was on lockdown for like a week and people are like fucking panicking. You know what I mean?
Mm.
So this small council plus Lord Beesbury, which I've said here is the Green Council, name of the episode, it's kind of a cool scene that, like, I was really looking forward to. I've really been looking forward to this scene because in the book there's several different interpretations of what happened. And I was looking forward to Lord Beesbury dying, guys. I really was.
Mm.
I was looking forward to him getting his throat slit or something, or thrown out of a window. And the way he died was such an anticlimax.
How is Crispy still going, right?
Why is he allowed to murder with impunity? I mean,
exactly.
I know why.
But why?
No
though?
One even goes, that was a bit much. They all just go,
oh, you shouldn't really say anything. Be part of the Kingsguard anymore, should you? But actually,
mouthing off, wasn't he?
I want him to die so
he's
bad.
He's Lord Commander now for that brilliant heroic act that
utter
he just did.
Nonsense. That.
I really wanted Harold Westerling, a.k.a. their version of Barristan, to fucking throw down with him here. I really wanted that to happen because that makes sense. Yeah, it does. He's like, take off your cloak, Sir Criston, take it off. And he puts his sword to his throat. And I was like, let's do it. Let's go.
Yeah, so that can we do? Can we do a book spoiler here? Because it doesn't affect the show.
Of course we can.
Yeah, so, I mean, old Crispy, he becomes Lord Commander because he's dead, isn't it? Like, but he just dies of natural causes from memory. Just old.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
he dies about 10 years before this or something like that.
Yeah, he's already dead. He's already dead at this point.
Oh, yeah, I knew that already. I've read that.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I'm pretty sure...
I was sitting there going, don't spoil it.
Pretty sure Crispy is already Lord Commander when he slits or does whatever he does to Beesbury. I always remembered him as slitting his throat, and that, to me, seems the better way to do it rather than go, sit down, and he pushes his head into the table and his head splits into the ball. Oh, it's needless, isn't it?
He's old.
Mush head.
Mushroom.
Oh, yeah. We'll talk about mushroom a bit later, John, because there's some saucy little mushroom takes coming up.
Canal.
Do you know what seems just very back to Olivia Cooke and Alison and the way they've written her character? The fact that she is baffled by what's going on here is a concern to me.
Bad.
Because she knows what's going on. Come on. Mm. Come on.
Her dad's been encouraging her to sort of taint Viserys' mind against Rhaenyra all along by saying if Rhaenyra becomes queen, she'll kill your children. Like, and now she's like, what? All along you've been doing this? It's like, come on, love. I think they're trying to make her more sympathetic.
Of course they are, yeah. Of course
and
they are.
That's okay, but it doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't, yeah. The thing is, it doesn't line up with the story anyone else in that family either. It's like, yeah, anyway.
I just think it's weird because I get it. I know what they're trying to do. And I even said it was a problem earlier in the season. So I'm holding my hands up and I said, you know, Team Green, they've got a bit of a problem because no one's going to be like, oh, I really feel for that character. And you know what? Compared to the book version of Alison, I actually do have sympathy for this version of the character. Like, I am sympathetic towards her plight because of the way they've, you know, changed things. However, I do think that if they had just let the story progress, sort of like the books or even close to it, I think by the time you get towards the end of Dance of Dragons or whatever, you feel morally grey about everyone. You know what I mean? It doesn't, you don't, if you just trust in the process and let it evolve.
Human nature is not black and white in any reality or unreality or fantasy. There is no pure good or pure evil. Everybody has a greyness to them. And I think it's...
Speak for yourself.
Got it in my hair.
Yeah, you're very white, to be fair.
Yeah, you're looking...
Pale. You're very white. I thought you'd been dead for 8 days, to be honest, when you popped up on this Zoom.
You're the same colour as your wall.
One thing we haven't covered, actually, and I'm surprised you haven't covered it, Len.
Sorry.
And it was something that it was fine. And it's something I had a massive concern with right at the beginning, where I was like, A Song of Ice and Fire, blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, needless. And then last week, I obviously wasn't on the episode, but we end it a very good episode. I'd have given it a 4 bloobs. We end it with a silly thing where it's like, oh, okay, well, maybe he's on about my rapist son. Maybe he thinks he is the prince that was promised. Yep. Definitely not. But anyway,
that's what we said.
So it's like, okay, well, but surely that's more of an excuse rather than a genuine, no, this is what happened. And now we're led to believe that the whole point of this usurpiness is, or at least what Alison goes along with, is that she's like, no, yeah, he genuinely said, my smelly rapist son that likes, you know, breeding bastards to fight to the death before the age of 10 in a fighting pit somewhere whilst he's not raping people. Yeah, that one, yeah. He's the prince that was promised that's going to unite the realm. Yeah. Go away, man, honestly.
No, we did say last week, John, that, like, obviously they're not talking about that fucking Aegon as prince is promised. I think what we've fallen down on, at least me and Sir Gareth in the hot take, is she's clinging on to anything to justify what is about to happen. And that is the way that I'm seeing it. Now, her telling Otto doesn't make a fucking difference to Otto because this plan has been in place regardless of those last words. So That's the thing. So I think from a perspective of chain of events, it makes zero difference, because whether or not he said it or not, Otto would have done it.
What I'm getting at, though, is in the books, that's definitely not what's going on. You know, it's because Alison, she's much more driven to the end goal. But in the show, it's kind of like, well, no, actually, there was a misunderstanding because her zombie husband, he was blubbering on about, the prince that was promised or whatever. And that is why, actually. Go away, man. Like, fuck's sake. It's just shit, isn't it? It's so poor.
Yeah, they have brought the prophecy up one too many times. Ooh, and also, you know what's really interesting? Mm. Rewatching Game of Thrones season one, the amount of times that dagger appears, so cool, actually, to see it now in with that link, actually. I know we talk about them showing the dagger a lot in the show, but because Mel, my partner's just watched House of Dragon, I'm like, do you recognise that dagger? Oh, she's like, is that the dagger? And I'm like, yeah, that's the dagger. So it's pretty cool, so really. And if you think about the story of the dagger itself, and where it's come from to where it goes in the show, it's fucking awesome. Like, it is really cool. I just wish they'd stop hammering home this Song of Ice and Fire prophecy being the motivation factor for both characters now. It should just be for Rhaenyra, because I think that makes much more sense.
Yeah, look, I don't mind the dagger being like this thing, because it's an actual object, you know. So even when Littlefinger's got it, he doesn't understand the prophecy or whatever. It's just very cool dagger that has been owned by princes and
dragon
yada yada yada.
Hill.
It's like the swords, Valerian, right? Steel. You know, all the Valerian steel swords. You know, as soon as you see a Valerian steel sword, it's going to have some cool history. That's fine. But if someone's like, oh, actually, there's a scroll that comes with this sword, and it talks about this boy, and I think his name's going to be Don Stark or whatever. It's like, no. Right? It's just shit. Like, just stop it. Just focus on your own story. Anyway, carry on. We'll be talking all night otherwise.
Okay, we then see Helena and her two twins, Jaehaerys and Jaehaera. And she keeps uttering, you know, she's a dreamer. We've talked about this and how some of the things she's mentioned have come true. And she said it last week as well. She said it at the toast, at the meal. She said, there's a beast beneath the boards. Yeah. And it's been quite interesting, because on Reddit, and me being a, you know, somebody who's read the source material and stuff, the other prophecies I could sort of figure out, like, you know, she discussed Aemon losing an eye before he gets a dragon. She's discussed another thing, which I won't spoil, which probably is going to happen. And beast beneath the boards, I was like, what the fuck is this talking about? Like, and a lot of people on Reddit were speculating. And I think we can safely say it's the end of the episode now. So it's a complete show situation. So it's interesting. I do like her character. Like, Helena is very interesting, you know, because of this dreaming situation. And she's married to Aegon, but she hates him. And John's alluded to the fact that Aemon and her have this connection, which I think is very interesting, right, John?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, look at the... So at the end of the episode where he almost looks like he's standing in front of his sister and her hands on his arm or whatever. It's quite, okay, they're brother and sister, so they're always going to be affectionate. But also they're Targaryen, so that affectionate goes a little bit too far. And Aegon, I assume, is sleeping with everyone but his wife, to be honest. So,
yeah, you kind of get the sense in this episode that Aemon... He's quite honourable, but he envies everything that this fucking little dickhead Aegon has in front of him. Like, he loves Helena, you know, he wants to be with her, is kind of the interpretation I get anyway. And he also wants to be king. He feels like he would be much better suited to it. He studies, you know, he understands the history of his house, all of this sort of stuff, whereas Aegon doesn't give a fuck. So it's an interesting dynamic for his character. Mm. And I actually still like his character quite a lot. I'm really excited for like next week and his character going forward. He's someone I definitely think I will care about, you know, in the show. So That's definitely a positive to take from it. When Aegon disappears from the Red Keep, Otto has Khingard, Sir Eric and Sir Arik search the city, while Alicent sends Crispy and Prince Aemond. Mysaria, the White Worm, informs Otto that Aegon is hiding in the city sept, but Criston and Aemond apprehend him after a brief fight. Lots to cover here. Mainly, I think we're all in agreement that this whole chase through Flea Bottom is benign and Gaz mentioned it was like daytime TV sort of situation in a hot take. John, you've likened it to Hercules. Lucy, Emma, any thoughts on this escapade?
Yeah, it's like a Merlin type thing. You know, like, yes, Sunday afternoon BBC drama, but worse. Worse than that.
Yeah, I like a Sunday afternoon BBC drama.
But not in this, though. Fucking House of the Dragon.
Yeah.
I think, though, kind of coming back to what we were saying about the room and, like, with the Green Council in a room, you know, they could have done less better in this episode. And what they could have done was that the council discussion and looking for Aegon in a better way. And that could have been the episode. You didn't need to go immediately to the coronation all in the space of 1 hour. And I think that was part of the problem with this episode, is just too much done poorly. I didn't mind the chase for Aegon. Like, it didn't bother me massively.
Yeah, but you're watching fucking CIS or NCIS or whatever. That's what you're watching at the moment. Right. Rewatching it. Garbage.
The thing that was interesting to me about it was kind of seeing the difference in loyalties between Eric and Arik, getting a little bit of insight into, you could almost see the parallels with Daemon in the early episodes and Aegon's behaviour. Some of it was interesting. Crispy just needs to die is my main takeaway from this episode. And I'm skipping right soon to the end. Why is he crowning the new king? Fuck off.
So annoying.
The Lord Commander does crown the new king. Well, that's what happens. Sorry.
Little prick. Look, I mean, it was a little bit farcical, but it was done, I think, as a, you know, it was tried to be used as a plot device to give us some background and some knowledge of, you know, what Aegon's been doing in the last 6 years since we last saw him wanking over the kind of city, and to give us more of an insight into Aemond. And I understand why they did it, just to try. Less is more, guys. Less is more.
I don't think we needed to see this stuff. I know they're trying to cram a lot in here, like with the fighting pits and stuff, which is interesting. Don't get me wrong. I think the inner workings of the common folk is instrumental in what is about to happen. So we do need to see more of them, and White Worm as well. But it just
her
felt
accent's
so much
terrible, though. She's so jarring.
Fucking finally, someone is brave enough to say it. Like, I
she's
said
English,
this to.
So what's this accent? She's English.
Yeah, is she actually?
Mm-hmm.
There are a children fighting in the fighting pits. This must stop.
I know, and then it's like, we've only just seen that there's these horrible fighting pits, and then suddenly she's like, we must put a stop to it. It's like,
correct.
Oh, okay.
Yes. But again, this is what I'm talking about, is terrible, lazy writing. It's so, like, hacky.
Stop trying to make me care about things
without
any intro to it.
Yeah, if you put the effort and the introduction and the kind of the time behind it into something like that, I'm not saying I don't care about children being forced to fight in pits. I do. That's shit and horrible and awful, and it should be
stopped. Never going
to
see it again.
But five minutes of that is not going to make me sign a petition. You know,
And they didn't even show it, really, which I'm glad I don't need to see it, but no guts.
No, I agree, but I think that's the problem with the whole of this season one, really, is if you look at it as a holistic piece, is that they sped through a lot very quickly and they didn't have to.
But then, I think they could have shown Alicent, say, send out there of people, go and get Aegon, then you could see who brings him back. Don't need to see the chase at all.
Yeah. I actually quite like Sir Eric and Sir Arik.
Scene was so bad as well.
Fight scene's terrible. Bad, but I'm saying that I like the idea of them splitting up and being on either side of the conflict. I like that. And I hope that it develops further next season.
Well, we know it will, won't we? We know that's the point, right? You know, it's they're going, look, we need to get these two characters to this point before X episode. So let's just stick this thing in. I get it, right? But it's but that will tell you that the crafting of some of this season is just like, well, why have they included that? Like, I mean, honestly, let's go back to the fucking white stag thing. Like, cut that out. That doesn't need to happen, honestly. Really doesn't. You know, let's give more time to developing some of these strands that you're now struggling to develop now. Yeah, anyway.
We see the bastard Targaryens, or at least one of them, in the fighting pits.
Little fellow, God knows.
Yeah, very young. God knows how many Aegon has. Do you guys think they'll be important later on?
No.
Like Robert's bastards were, potentially?
They're a lot more easy to distinguish than Robert's bastard. Like, go and kill every baby with dark hair. Whereas these lads really do look Targaryen. Mm. They might, I don't know.
Yeah, imagine trying to hide them. Fucking hell.
Just wearing a hat for the rest of your life.
Who's your dad? Because you look like a Targaryen, to be honest. What are you doing down here?
Got a light bulb head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what? Yeah, I have a feeling they might be important, Len. You know, I've just got a gut feeling.
Gut feeling.
Mm. You lot know. It's cheating.
We don't know anything. We know nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah? Jon Snow. So let's talk about the elephant in the room. The
could be anything at this point.
Yeah. We all know what we're coming on to now.
Feet.
Oh, shouldn't have said those words.
Can we not? Crass. Please, no.
That is crass.
Absolutely crass. Larys Strong warns Alicent of Mysyria's or the White Worm's spy network.
Mm.
And as a, you know, trade for this information, he wanks off to her Alicent's pristine feet.
Mm. No, he might have just been adjusting.
Her feet are not even that nice.
Is that what you say, is it, John?
Adjusting. You know, I doubt they were doing mani-pedis in these days, so I don't mind them not being, like, perfectly pearly pink, to be fair.
You're having a go at the feet and not the guy wanking.
Emma is, not me.
Oh, right, okay.
I'm just trying to make myself feel better about the disgusting and unnecessary perversion that we've brought into this TV show that had, no foundation, background or logic to it.
I've written here, why did we need to see this?
We didn't.
I've written here, feels like something not even Mushroom would come up with, John.
Yeah.
Not even Mushroom would come on that.
Yeah. Look, I mean, anyone that knows me knows that I hate feet. So this scene to me was fucking like disgusting. So absolutely not needed. Really not needed. Can we not have his character be so obviously creepy and evil? Like, this was the point that I made when we had Aegon just wanking out of the window. Like,
that wasn't it's lazy, on the same isn't level it? For me,
like, honestly, we're going to have someone just kicking the homeless in the next episode, or just fucking like just
Sir Criston, no doubt.
Well, yes.
In fairness, Rhaenys just did that with a dragon's tail. Like.
Well, there you go. So good, that's happened already.
Eat the poor.
You know, Varys, Littlefinger, obviously like snidey, like useful, but you can't really fully trust them characters. Littlefinger more so than Varys. Varys was kind of, you know, I think he was better at like not revealing his motivations.
True intentions, yeah.
And yet you've got fucking Larys. I'm not even sure, did he need a club foot? Like, to be honest, it's just like they've
That shows that he's bad.
Yeah, he's a cripple and evil, isn't he? Look at him.
And this
yes.
just adds to that, like,
I'm amazed they didn't make him a dwarf as well. Like, yeah, just make him a dwarf as well, isn't it? Just evil.
It's really lazy.
Oh, mate, honestly, just shit. And again, it's not in the book. You know, I've not. There's no secret chapters that I've missed where it's like, apparently Larys loved wanking over feet. Like, fucking hell, honestly.
Like, the I'd Queen love could, like, to have know. Them executed, surely? Like, for Just for anything. Get Kristen to come and fucking kill him.
It'd be less creepy if she was just sucking him off and that was why how she was getting information out.
Was that a kid? But was it?
That would have been fine. Like, but if they were going to go for something like that, why did it have to be feet? It makes no sense.
Why does it have to be anything?
Well, I mean, it doesn't.
I think he's holding obviously over her the kind of the getting rid of the, his family at her quote-unquote say-so. That's enough. It's not right. Mm. Well, actually, also, you show me your feet. Because she could just say, off with his head.
Would it have been worse if it was like...
She could say to Kristen, he's tried to touch me. Can you kill him? And Kristen would literally do anything because he's got no brain.
No, easy. Hold on.
So easy.
Constantly having a go at Crispy.
I hate him alone, right?
Awful. Hate him.
Hottest guy I've ever hated.
Yeah.
Down with Kristen.
Yes. Would it have been worse if it was like she had to give his club foot like a massage or something? Suck his toes? That would have been grim, right?
Yeah, you would have hated that, John.
Fucking hell, I would not have turned up to this podcast. That would be me done for the season. Zero blues all the way.
Should have feet that you've even brought that up as a suggestion.
I'm just saying. I'm just. How far can they take it? Is that going to happen again?
Well, can you not take it any further? I feel revolted by this whole thing.
Yeah. That bit's shit. Move on.
Really bad.
From my perspective, this whole foot thing is just... It's just... Why? I just keep coming back to why. What is this telling us about Laris? What is this telling us about Alison? It's not really telling me anything other than, yeah, Laris is actually a fucking creep as well as being a fucking shady motherfucker. Like, but leave a bit of fucking mystique to his character.
Yeah, he didn't actually make him mystic,
you know?
Their interactions previously had much more nuance and were actually quite a lot more threatening and a bit made you more uneasy. Like, what is he capable of? And now it's just wanking over feet. It's like, right.
Yeah.
Less like scary as a person now that we know that.
Just gross.
I agree.
So some of the stuff that they did with Joffrey kind of annoyed me, where it was like overly just sadistic. And it kind of just got like, there was the bit where he had like the crossbow and the,
What's going on here?
Like, is this necessary? And it sort of feels a bit like that, but it's obviously all been condensed into one season where we've got a guy that's like, oh, this guy's got club foot and he doesn't feel like he can hang around with the men, so he's going to hang around with the women. Fast forward 9 episodes later, wanking over feet. So if you're feeling sorry for him then, you know, more for you.
Queen's feet.
Yeah. And he's constantly going, oh, do you want me to fucking kill someone? Because I'll do it if you ask me. Like, fucking hell. Tidy yourself up, mate. Honestly.
All right. I think we've spent at least 10 minutes talking about people wanking over feet. So let's move on. Because I didn't think I'd be saying that sentence this season. Honestly.
Again.
I did not think I'd be saying that this season. And I have. So yes. Let's get on to the end of the episode. Otto has hundreds of small folk herded into the Dragon Pit's main hall, where he announces Viserys' death and crowns Aegon as king. At the same time, Sir Eric is trying to smuggle Princess Rhaenys out of the castle. Let's just talk about Rhaenys quickly and her interaction with Alicent as well, because Alicent comes in and tries to sort of, go, look, you should join our team. Our team's really good in that. And you should have been queen, yeah?
Yeah.
You should have been queen, but I'm actually going against a woman sitting on the throne and installing my rapist son.
I loved.
So when join that team.
When Rhaenys turned around and went, haven't you ever thought about yourself being on the throne? I thought, yes, because all you're showing is that she's pathetic and she's a puppet. A puppet.
This is probably the best scene for me. I thought, acting-wise, dialogue, and how she sort of draws the comparison that all we've ever done is act for men. And it's like...
Very good.
Yep. And she will not stop doing that. She's doing it again for her son.
Yeah.
So I thought it was strong.
Mm. Is that the only interaction they've had this season?
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Those actresses, anyway.
Yeah. And I haven't spoken to you this in the last 15 years, but basically, come on. Let's be friends together.
Mother to mother.
I've imprisoned you. That was a good scene. I've trapped a dragon.
Yeah, it was a good scene. But you know it's only going one way, so it's sort of...
Yeah. Well, you sit there and you're just like, I think at this moment in time, you don't really have a sense of who's got what on what side in terms of, I mean, you do if you're like a super fan, I guess, know what dragons are on which side and all that sort of jazz. But, you know, you need to sort of understand, like, if one side has a few more dragons than the other, they're huge favourites.
Which, you know, they're going to the match. Blacks have huge favourites, right?
In the matchup.
The blacks have more dragons, yeah. That's, well, right. But the greens have the biggest dragon in Vhagar.
Well, look, you know, we're obviously, we're book readers, so we've got some sort of sense of the task at hand. So right now, ladies, if I was to ask you, you know, what you think the disparity is in terms of number of dragons or whatever, would you hazard a guess?
Okay, let me do some maths.
Dragon maths. It's like normal maths, but instead of numbers, it's dragons.
Does Helena have, whatever her name is, have a dragon?
Yep, Dreamfire.
So there you go.
Yep. So I think the greens have three.
And I think the blacks have five.
So I would, why are you holding up eight?
So that's on Zoom.
That's five.
Five for
the
blacks and three for the greens. And okay, one of those is the biggest dragon in the world. Is that right? Five and three?
What's happened to Lainor's dragon? Where's he?
Yeah, well, that's interesting as well. Yeah.
Well, I was assuming that one of the kids had that.
Someone's going to get that.
Yeah, I think the blacks at this stage have six dragons.
They weren't far off.
They've got Syrax, Caraxes. So Syrax is Rhaenyra's. They've got Caraxes, which is Daemon's. They've got Meleys, which is Rhaenys. Then they've got Vermax, which is Jacerys. Luceres is, what's his fucking name? And also Baby Joffrey has one as well.
Mm. So are they little dragons, though? Are they like little baby
but
ones?
Also, you've got to remember that Rhaenyra and Baelor.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. I'm sure they've got dragons.
One of them has a dragon, and I can't remember its name for life of me, but they're a lot smaller at the moment. Whereas on the greens, you've got Dreamfire, Sunfire, Vhagar.
It's quite a lot of youth players. On the on the black side.
You'll win nothing with kids.
Stamina, though. Yeah. Stamina.
Whereas the greens have got, you know, Harland, basically.
A veteran.
Yeah. Interestingly, they have said, and we haven't seen him yet, but Alicent's fourth child, Darren. Remember I talked to you about Darren?
Oh, yeah, Darren. Daz.
Darren, or Darian, his name is. He does exist, apparently, and he is going to be in season two. Mm. So that's interesting, because he is actually kind of has a cool little arc in the books in a way. So, and he has a dragon.
In a way.
Blacks are ahead in terms of dragons. Anyway, we digress. So that's where we're at.
Are you holding your hand up for it to answer a question?
Just speak.
Yes, the podcast. Yeah, go on. Just speak, man.
Go on then.
Try not to interrupt. So if we're talking about the anointing of the new king, when Aegon turned around and looked at the crowd, for a split second, I thought he was going to slit his own throat.
Okay.
Was that just me?
Okay.
I thought he was going to do something completely opposite to being like, yeah, king, yeah.
That would have been hilarious.
I genuinely thought that was what was going to happen.
I think that would have been better.
There's my comment on it. It would have been better. Slit my throat. I'd have given it four blues for that.
Mm. Yeah, that's an interesting take, Emma. And I've actually written here that he obviously starts this episode not wanting to be king at all, but the moment he starts, you know, raising the sword and people cheering his name, I said he's buying into it more. You know, the idea that being king maybe isn't
the
bad.
Applause.
He loves the.
I mean, if you walked into a room and you've got hundreds of people that are cheering for you, you'd definitely get into it.
Yeah, of course.
I'll be swinging that sword. No, I'd lob that sword into the crowd. Like, why not?
Yeah. Blackfire.
Yeah.
So I thought that was cool as well. We see Aegon the Conqueror's crown, his Valyrian steel crown, and his ancestral sword, Blackfire. Conquered the Seven Kingdoms.
Anyone else find the reaction to Viserys' death from the crowd quite funny? It was very
because they've noticed that he's a
quite
zombie.
Muted.
Yeah.
Oh well, we were expecting it.
Yeah.
I think they did a good job here of the book. They sort of say, like, there's this, they don't know how it was received, like how many people were there in the dragon pit. They don't know if they were, like, cheered or there was sort of a muted applause. And I think they did a kind of good job here of at least going, like, I didn't have a fucking clue what the crowd really thought, even when they were cheering. I was a bit like, this is a bit fake, because first of all, when he's crowned, they're a bit like, Yeah. It's a bit weird.
And then some people get into it. Like, oh, come on. Do you know what I mean? We're not at work
today.
Doesn't
it make sense, though? Like, to the common people, whoever's in charge, it probably doesn't really make much difference to your life day to day. Much like with us.
Well, do you know what?
Well, Lucy.
You know,
that's interesting.
I'm not going to have a go at anyone that, you know, went to the funeral procession of the Queen and stuff and went to visit the palace and queued up for 28 hours to go and see a box. You do you, right? But I'm just saying, sometimes people have not got a lot else to do, and they will do it. At least with this, it's like, I'll go there, David Beckham. And, you know, I'll knock about for a bit, see a new king, and hopefully not get killed by a dragon that turns up out of nowhere.
Also, in fairness, none of them had a choice. They were all herded in there.
Yeah, they were corralled in.
So I imagine they were probably thinking, I should cheer so I don't die.
The reason Otto does that is because he needs to create this big ceremony to make it more official. Witnesses, everything. If they just did it behind closed doors, people are like, well, you know, what's going on? So he needs to create this huge situation, which is why the dragon pit is used. But of course, choosing the dragon pit could be disastrous because amid the commotion, Rhaenys reaches her dragon Meles and then demolishes the hall, killing, like you've said, hundreds of poor common folk, and then confronts the royal usurpers before fleeing on dragonback. Okay, big question. We've talked about it a bit, but why doesn't she just kill them?
Yes, obviously, that would be the end of the show. In season two, then, with the...
Why was there no guard guarding the dragons?
Yeah, it is mad that if you're just in the crowd, you can just wander down to the... Hey, come down here. Let's go have a look at these dragons then.
Yeah. So that's the first question.
It's a good question.
She should have killed them all.
I mean, it's a huge plot point that they've written themselves into a corner on, like, just that unnecessarily. Like, and the reason they've done it is to make the coronation more... they're like, they're probably like, I think this is what happened. They've got to like episode 9, and they're like, oh, episode 9, traditionally there's something big that always happens. What have we got this episode? So yeah, Aegon gets he gets the coronation, but it needs to be better because it's pretty. Yeah, put a foot wank in there. And then also, maybe a dragon. How do we get a dragon in there? House of the Dragon. How do we get a dragon in there?
Right, I take issue with this because if you're doing a 10 episode season, right, you've written all of those episodes and at some point someone's read them all through. And if they've gone to episode 9 and gone, this isn't dramatic enough, and you've got time to change stuff, right? You haven't done your final submission of your dissertation here. You can edit this. If you wanted a dragon, you could have had Rhaenyra arriving. That would have been logical.
That could have been interesting.
She said she was going to do it too.
Yeah, exactly.
That would have been interesting. That would have been very interesting.
Plot. That would have made more sense. So next season, guys, if you're listening, get me in.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I just think it was a situation they didn't need to write themselves into. And like John said at the start, you might have loved it, dear listener, but genuinely, I implore you to think about, you know, next episode, Rhaenys is going to be fighting these people on Dragonback and almost, you know, it's life or death situation for everyone.
Mm.
So why? She knows that's coming. There's no way that's not happening. You know, she's smart.
Well, it wouldn't happen if she'd burnt them all.
Yeah.
So just ask yourself, as a motivation for a character, why?
Mm.
Why?
Yeah, doesn't make any sense.
And that's all I have to say about it. I mean, look, if anyone else wants to, we can wrap up the episode there. Or
yeah, that'll do.
Whatever. I do think, though, that the dragon roaring at them was really cool, and I thought it was a cool shot. And I thought the dragon actually looked really good. But I will say the rubble effects in the dragon pit were sick form level, like college level. They were abysmal.
Mm.
And I think the big problem I've got is, as well, this whole show is going to have so much CG coming up that I'm worried because, and I said this to Gaz, I was like, Gaz, is it because I've watched Rings of Power where, honestly, it's unbelievable. I can't believe how good it looks.
Yeah.
You know, am I now just like, that is the gold standard and then everything else below it is just terrible? Or is this bad? And I looked at that smoke effect again. I've watched it several times. It is abysmal. It is so bad.
It is bad.
I could make that smoke effect and those rubbles. You know what I mean?
Well, they're hoping that you just... The casual viewer is not really going to give a shit about. They're just going to look at the dragon. You know,
there were scenes in Game of Thrones with dragons that were much better. And that's how many years ago was that CGI?
Yeah,
so
I don't know why. There are also scenes
in
Game of Thrones that look a bit shit, to be honest. But it doesn't matter because the characters are good. The story's good. You don't really care about, you know. I'm sure it's quite difficult to put a scene like that together, but even more so, it's like,
Do it then.
Yeah.
If you can't
do it
right.
It's not even in the books. Why have you done it?
Don't do it at all.
Yeah. Why have you baked this cake? I didn't ask for a cake. It's not even my birthday. I'll have it anyway. It looks terrible. It
tastes shit. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. I will. Okay.
Good.
All right, well, let's wrap up the episode there. As we said, we hope we've given you some reasons to think about why some of those scenes necessarily didn't line up with our expectations. But we do have some feedback, so let's move on to that now. Guess what, guys? Title guy is back.
I watched them this week.
Yeah.
You watched it?
Yeah, I couldn't get it to skip right, so I had to watch it all.
Well, did you notice the changes, Lucy? Because
I don't know what it was like before.
Definitely left the room.
He says Viserys' symbol is now filled with blood to signal his death.
Oh, yeah.
And they added a blue sapphire for Aemon.
Ooh.
Which is
what's
interesting.
The relevance of that?
Should we just tell you? It's not really a spoiler.
Yeah,
it's
let's
not really
just
a spoiler.
Say.
It's just he's got a blue sapphire where his eye was under
That's
his
cool.
eye patch.
That's very punk.
So
haven't they also
I'm sure
put
you'll see it next week.
7-pointed star on Alicent's thingy.
Yep.
Mm.
They have got stuff like that. I think he's mentioned that in previous ones, then. So,
yeah.
You're on title watch as well, aren't you?
I haven't watched the title Lesser. For like 4 weeks, so that was what I noticed.
I skip it every time.
I'm just proving I'm watching, okay?
I try.
I'll tell you what, this is, look, I said before, you know, the confusion about who's got what dragons. I'm telling you, season two, let's just have that. Have it like a team sheet. Who's got whose dragons?
How they line up.
Yeah, what's the formation? Yeah. Where are the dragons knocking about this episode? Is it a dragonstone? You know?
Yeah.
But you know, you laugh, but like that will actually help.
Don't violet drift, Mark.
Because some people are like, who's this dragon? Well, he's dead now, so who cares? You know, that will start happening.
No.
Dead dragon.
Well, I'm just saying, you know.
Well, get ready for that. We also have feedback from Tim Pickerel, a patron, friend of the show and member of the Watchers on the Couch pod. Check him out, guys. Please do. That's Watchers on the Couch pod. He's had this to say. And this is, Lucy, do you remember last week when you you tried to make me sound like a fucking dickhead by telling you the ages of everyone? And I was
that was funny.
Fucking hell.
I asked a very simple question. You made yourself look like a dickhead. Yeah?
Well, no.
Self-inflicted.
I did a very good job. So whatever.
You just said anyway. You look like a dickhead.
In reference to the how old is such and such at this point in the show, did anyone else catch the behind the episode where Condal says, Condal's one of the showrunners, says they age the kids up to 17 to 21. If this last episode was a 6-year jump and episode 6 was a 10-year jump, that's 16 years. Prior to that, Aegon was around 3 based on the mummer's play. Jace and Aemon weren't born yet, so at most, Jace and Aemon can only be 16 and Aegon is 19 and Helaena is 17, right?
Mm.
Did I miss something? Did it take another few years to ship Laena's body back to Driftmark and they didn't tell us? I know Matt Smith is in this show, but I still expected less wibbly wobbly timey wimey. Mm.
Doctor Who reference.
Nice. Even I got that. Nice.
Good that. As always, much love, Tim Pickerel. Thanks, Tim. The age thing is difficult, isn't it? I think we're in the right ballpark with what you've said there. And yeah, I think, you know, the kids are a few years older than what they are in the book. I think like 15 or 16. I think Luke's like 13 or 14.
I think there's,
it's about 8.
Luke and Jace, there's like a year's difference, I think.
Yeah.
Year or two
that's
at
right.
maximum.
Yeah, I think but it's 15 and 14. I think it's 15 and 14.
He does look drastically younger than everyone else.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Joff, the third kid of Rhaenyra, he looks really young in the show. I would say he's actually like 12 or something, or 11.
I do not recall seeing this child. Where was he?
He was
playing on the mat.
You saw him get born in episode 6.
Yeah, I remember the birth.
Yeah, and you saw him in Dragonstone.
And in this episode, he was playing on the mat. No, maybe that was last episode. That was
not in this episode.
Yeah, he's not in this one.
He's not in this one because there's no Team Black in this one.
I'm sure it's not important.
Other than Beesbury, of course, and Lord Caswell, who gets fucking hung as well. We didn't even talk about the Lords, but once again, it could have been so much better if they had just, you know, slit their throats and been brutal with it. But they just fucking, I don't know. That's it for this week, guys. I'm sorry that we were not, enthused. By the episode, we feel like traditionally episode 9 could be the best.
Critical. Fan critical.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing, though. I feel, more so than other podcasts, we actually say it like it is, instead of some podcasts who sit there and just go, oh, yeah, fantastic. What a fantastic show. Fantastic, fantastic, fantastic. And you just sit there and go, well, come on, guys. There's things in there which clearly are not great. And at least we say it like it is, which is why we exist, to be the sort of anchor point to your realities, dear listeners.
Wanker point.
Especially John, fuck me, he'll bring you down to earth quicker than you can say fucking anything.
No, but look, if next episode, if it's a 5 bloob, and I think it probably, it should be with what they've got to work with, then I'll be the first to say, that was lit. I'll be the first to say that. And I'll put the hashtag, peak.
Hashtag fire.
This episode was lovely. Peak.
Peak.
I will quit if someone says that next week.
All right, well, there you go.
Wait and see.
Yeah, more motivation.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thanks for joining me this week. I want to thank my small council. You may open the doors to the council chambers because we
finally
have finished
stinks.
Here. Finally, stink 7 days. Fuck me.
Yeah.
I want to say thank you to Lady Baron.
Thanks, Len.
Lady Emma.
Thanks, Lenny.
Bronze John.
Thank you, Leonard.
And of course, little Gareth, who can't be here today. We thank him for trying. For trying and just
Gold
being
stars.
With us.
Stop
pot
shotting him. He's not here. But he said he's going to be here next week.
The next
right?
one.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's in next week. He's in next week. We've got all of us next week. So it is, of course, we have the hot takeout for episode 10 next Monday, and we will catch you then. Bye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.